Today's shiur is Masechta Baba Basra, Daf Lamed Hey. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem is Baruch on Daf Lamed Dalet on the Be'ez. Says the Gemara, Zeh Omer, if somebody's holding on to a boat, a piece of property, and he claims, Shalavoisai, that this piece of property is mine, I have it from my forefathers. And the other one says, Zeh Omer, and the other party says, Shalavoisai, that this came to me from my forefathers. And the Rishonim explained that the Gemara could be speaking about a situation where each one of them comes with this type of a claim. That's one type of situation that our Gemara addresses. The other situation that our Gemara addresses is that each one of them have Edom, explained the Rashbam, that this property belonged to them. So what do we do in such a situation? So Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, under such situations, the Halacha tells us, called the Olam Gvar, as we discussed quite extensively at the end of our previous year, that under certain circumstances, the Halacha is that the Halacha is the called Olam Gvar, whoever is stronger prevails. And as we mentioned, fundamental Machloikas Rishonim, why does called the Olam Gvar work? Some Rishonim suggest that Kol the Olam Gvar operates, the Rosh explains, because whoever really owns the property will fight for it and will do whatever he can to prevail, and that's why Kol the Olam Gvar. And others explain, other Rishonim, that Kol the Olam Gvar means that Bezdin just steps away, and since Bezdin just steps away, that's when we say Kol the Olam Gvar. There is interesting discussion amongst the Poskim already. Would Bezdin, Bezman Hazeh, nowadays use the principle Kol the Olam Gvar? Some are of the opinion that we only apply the concept of Kol the Olam Gvar in a Bezdin, which is an established Bezdin that has smicha. Another say that Kol the Olam Gvar is any Bezdin can apply it. Actually, it's probably connected to the Machlokes Rishonim that we just quoted. If we say that Kol the Olam Gvar means that because Bezdin just doesn't know what to do, so Bezdin is misalik themselves, they just say we are removing ourselves from this Dentira, so then Kol the Olam Gvar would be applicable even Bezman Hazeh. Because Bezdin just says, we don't know what to do, and we're going to remove ourselves. If, however, Kol the Olam Gvar is a psak of Bezdin, the Bezdin is saying that in this situation, we say Kol the Olam Gvar, which is much closer to the opinion of the Rosh, than maybe only a Bezdin that has the proper smicha could say Kol the Olam Gvar. It's not something that any Bezdin could say that. And in fact, the Shas of Tshuvas Shvus Yaakov, Chelik Beis Choshem Mishpat Simen Kuf Samach Zayin, the Pesachei Tshuva in Choshem Mishpat Simen Kuf Ayin Dalas of Cotton Aleph quotes this Shvus Yaakov. It says, Bezmanenu Ein Onan Domnim Kol Dom Gvar. Bezman Hazeh, we don't follow the Psak of Kol Dom Gvar. And he continues to say, Libi Oimeli, my heart says to me, the Bezmanenu, Shanachnu Begoyla Shvolim Venivzim, now that we are in Golis, in a weak position, the Kainzim Oid Alakar, and we live under the rule of the Akum, Yesh Kamech Hashoshes, he says, we need to be concerned, Im Nifsoi Kol Dom Gvar, how our neighbors will react to that. So he says that, and moreover, he says, even according to the Rosh, that the Rosh says the Kol the Olam Gvar means, as we keep on repeating, that the person who really owns the property is going to do more to get his hands on it. We live in a time, he says, of gazlonim, of people who are dishonest. And they're dishonest to the degree that they'll do anything to support their dishonesty. Supporting their dishonesty means that they'll fight to keep something that doesn't really belong to them. Rabbi Chanan says that there's the famous story in Melachim with the two women who came to Shlomo HaMelech arguing over a child, who did the child belong to. And the pasuk says, "V'yom HaMelech chuli cherev," the king says, "Bring a sword and to cut the child into two." So the question is, asks Rabbi Chanan Zatzal, why do we say kol da'olam gvar? Why did he say, why was Shlomo HaMelech psak yachloiku, that we should divide the child? Shouldn't we say kol da'olam gvar? So the Sefer Masas HaMelech answers this question, and he answers this question with a very, very important principle. He says, when do we say kol da'olam gvar? We say kol da'olam gvar when two people, as we started our shiur today, are disagreeing on the ownership of a property, disagreeing on the ownership, as we've been describing, of a boat. There's a disagreement over the ownership of something. A kol da'olam gvar says that this is the way to settle that dispute. However, explains the Masas HaMelech, we don't own our children. So when we had this dispute, when these two women had this dispute, who is the owner of this child, kol da'olam gvar is not an option. Because kol da'olam gvar is only an option where we're disagreeing over something that we own. We don't own our children, and therefore kol da'olam gvar is not something that is not an option that the halacha offers for that type of dispute. But which opens up a very important discussion. And that is that in halacha, we have different approaches. Again, the halacha speaks extensively to situation of machloikis. And the question that needs to be evaluated is what we have different tools of what to do when we have a machloikis. We have, as Al Gemara says, kol da'olam gvar. We have yachloiku, as we just mentioned, and as we often have in Shas. And we have a third situation of yimonach hachiyov elio, should just stay where, the way it is. And the Rishonim discuss extensively, when do we use which approach? Rabbeinu Yachloiku, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it's a machloikus primarily of Rabbeinu Tam and the Rivah. Yachloiku, according to Rabbeinu Tam, requires two conditions. That indeed could be true that this belongs to both of the parties. The first Mishnah in Masechta Bab Metzia, Shnayim Oichs Metalis. So Tosfos explained at the beginning of where the Mishnah said Yachloiku, because maybe both of them picked it up at the same time and they both own half. So it could be true that the Yachloikut could be something which is actually the truth, and they're both Muchsokim, they're holding on to this item. The Rivah says that as long as they're both holding on to the item, even if we know that one is really not the owner of this item, the Rivah says we could say Yachloiku. Yemunach HaTshuv Elyo, Tosfos says we say when they're both holding on to the item, but in a situation where one is certainly not the owner of the item. So Tosfos says we can't have a situation of Yachloiku where we're going to award something to someone who clearly doesn't deserve it. The Rivah holds that even when it can't be true and it's not being held by either of the parties is when we say Yemunach. The principle that we're learning in our sugya of kol da'olam gvar, it's there, the Rebbeinu Tosfos, Rebbeinu Tam holds, that they're both not holding on to it. You can't be holding on to a piece of property. And we say it whether there is a vade remai or not. In our Gemara, they may be both owning it or maybe not. And Rivah says that we say kol da'olam gvar when they're both not holding on to it. Our Gemara, they're both not holding on to it. And when there's a vadei remoy, where certainly one is not the owner of the property, that's when we say the principle called da'olam gvar. Says the Gemara, umayshna, why is this any different than shnei shtaris? when we have two documents, there's a discussion amongst the Rishonim when the Gemara speaks about Shnei Shtaris here, or when the Gemara says that we're speaking about two documents, what type of documents are we talking about? Are we talking about Shtari Havah? Are we talking about Shtari Matana? The Pasha Pshat is that the Gemara is speaking about Shtari Matana, where somebody is giving a gift. But there are Rishonim that say it's talking about Shtari Mecher, also a transaction where a property was sold. Hayotzim Beyoim Echad, that both documents have the same day. They were both signed on the same day. And but the two documents have two different owners on this property. One says that the owners gave the property to Reuven, and one shtar says that the property was given to Shimon. So again, we have a question, who is the true owner? So the pshat that we're learning in the Gemara is the pshat that the Rashbam learns, that the Rashbam says that we have two signed documents, and what we are speaking about here is that they were both signed on the same day, and we don't know which shtar came first. Because, as the Rashbam explains, typically, time was not written into the shtar. And even if a time was written into the shtar, if it's a place, there's a machloikis, we'll bring Edom. Let's say we'll bring Edom, that both shtars have a certain date, but we could bring Edom, which shtar came first. In a place where time of the day is not a factor, then the fact that you have Edom, that your shtar came first, would not necessarily make you win, that din Torah. However, goes on the Rashbam to say, there were certain places that the minig, the custom was lichtoiv shas. Yerushalayim was such a place where the Gemara says that they used to write shas in Yerushalayim. And I saw that Rabben Gezatzal explains why was the minig in Yerushalayim specifically different than anywhere else where they wrote the hours of a shtar, which we don't find in other places. So Rabben Gezatzal explains that in Yerushalayim is where they brought the kabbonis. And when we speak about bringing kabbonis, time is a very important factor in bringing kabbonis. On our Pesach, we could bring the Karm Pesach, but we could only bring the Karm Pesach after Chatzos. The kabbonis could only be brought until a certain time in the day. So since in Yerushalayim, they were always bringing kabbonis, and the time factor of bringing the carbon is critical to the kashrus of a carbon. So they became accustomed that in Yerushalayim, they brought a carbon. When they wrote a shtar, they put the time into the shtar. So they wanted to train the people in Yerushalayim to recognize the significance of time. Because since they lived in Yerushalayim, the time factor is so important to the kabbonis that are brought in Yerushalayim. That's why in Yerushalayim, the minig was to write time. And therefore, in Yerushalayim, even if you have two shtaris on the same day, if the time is there, whichever has the earlier time is the transaction that the halacha recognizes come first. But in most places, they did not put the time stamp, so to speak, into a shtar. So if there is no time stamp, in a shtar, so then the halacha is that we can't, when we have to decide on a shtar, the way to decide on the shtar, we don't have, when we have these two shtaris on the same day. There are other Rishonim, however, who take a very different approach to this Gemara. And they disagree with the Rashbam. And their approach to the Gemara is, it really goes back to my famous Machloikis, Masechta Gittin, where the Gemara discusses often Eidim Mesira Karti or Eidim Chesima Karti. What is the critical element of a shtar? The people who signed the shtar or the people who watched the transmission of the shtar? So if we follow the psak of Eidim Mesira Karti, So the machlokes is not that they have the signatures on the same day. They both were transmitted on the same day. So we have these two shtaris, two people walking with two different shtaris with a dispute. Rav Amar, so Rav says under this situation, yachloiku, we don't know what to do. So the halacha tells us that yachloiku, the Shmuel Amar, and Shmuel says that in such a situation, we do shuda the dining. And here too, there's a very big machlokes Rashi in Tosfos. What is the definition of shuda the dini? According to Rashi, the Rashbam quotes Rashi, the definition of shuda the dini is that the Bezdin should use their discretion. Discretion is not the right word. They should make a decision based on the circumstances. Whom do they believe really is the owner of this property? They should analyze and evaluate the entire situation. And based on their analysis and on their evaluation, they will be able to determine who they believe is really the owner of this property. That's Rashi's pshat. Tosfos has a very different approach to Shuda the Daini. And Tosfos' approach to Shuda the Daini is that Shuda the Daini is a special power that was given to Beis Din. It doesn't mean that Beis Din has to make a decision based on what they think is right. On the contrary, Beis Din has a right to award the property to whomever they decide that they want to award the property, even if there's nothing pointing different specifically in that direction. And Rabbeinu Tam, the Rosh, this is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, and the Rosh explains the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Mm-hmm. He explains that since this entire was brought to the Dayan, and the Dayan, doing the best he can, can't really make a determination, he has no right to walk away. Because the Pasuk says, Emes u'mishpat v'shalom ahavu, that the responsibility of a Dayan is to do what's right and to bring shalom to the world. And that's why, since it is the obligation of the Dayan to bring shalom to the world, shalom is achieved by him issuing a decision, and we don't know what the proper decision should be. So that's why the Torah Kedosha, Chazal, give the koyach to the Dayan to make a decision, because once the decision is rendered, everybody will know what to do. The Gemara, Masechta Brachos, Daf Samach Gimel, Amud Beis, says Rabbi Shmuel Oimer, a roitzer shi'as chakim, if one wants to become a Talmud Chacham, yasek b'dinei mamnas. He should learn chayshe mishpat. He should learn the halachas that we're learning. She'en lecha mektzoy b'Torah. There is no subject in Torah yosem mehen greater than them. She'en kemayin hanaveya. They're like a flowing river. So the Ben Yoyada explains what is the difference between a mikvah and a mayan. He says a mikvah is a pool of water. It's a pool of stationary water. If you'll remove the water from the pool, there won't be any more water there. There won't be any new water growing. When we speak about a mayan, when we speak about a spring, they're constantly flowing, constantly is there new water coming out of the spring. So explains the Ben Yoyada. That's the difference between halachas of issa v'heter versus dire mamnes versus chayshe mishpat. For he explains, when we speak about issa v'heter, the halacha says kosher treif mutar asur. Not only does the halacha say kosher treif mutar asur, the halacha actually says that when there's a suffix, when we don't know what to do, so the halacha tells us suffix deraisa l'chumra, suffix derabbanan l'kula. The halachas are very clear and cut and clear. When we speak about dinei mamonis, the rules aren't suffix deraisa l'chumra, suffix derabbanan l'kula. Rather, as our Gemara is teaching us, shuda the dina. It becomes the responsibility of the dayan to issue a psak. And to issue psak according to what he decides the psak should be. So that's why, says the Ben Yoyada, when we speak about halachas of issa v'heter, they're viewed as a mikveh. they're viewed as a pool. There's a set halacha that is not negotiable. Versus when we speak about dine mamonis, it's a mind hanove, there's room for innovation, there's room for Talmud Chacham to say chidushe Torah, and that's why he suggested that we should learn, that's why Yishmael suggested we should learn Hilchas dine mamonis. So we have here in this situation, Machloikus Rav and Shmuel and Shmuel. Rav says Yachloiku, and Shmuel says Shuda the dining. So the question is, why here in our Gemara that did Rav Nachman tell us called Dalam Gvar? Why didn't he use the approach of Rav and Shmuel? Answers the Gemara. Hasam, when we have the case of these two documents, Lekmele Lamelsa, we will never be able to really determine what really happened. We have two documents, the way we started the shir with the Rashbam's approach. We have two documents with the same date, and we don't know which was first and which is second, or we said even if we'll know which is first or second, it wouldn't make a difference. And therefore, the halacha tells us kol dom gvar. Particularly if we learn pshat in kol dom gvar, is that Bezdin just removes itself from the situation. It's quite understandable what the Gemara means to say. Because what the Gemara is saying is that Bezdin says that this is a situation that we don't know what to do. And since this is a situation where we don't know what to do, we just misalk ourselves. Hocha, in the case of the shtar, so right now, indeed, we don't know how to decide this matter. But ultimately, ikalameima, the milsa, there will be an opportunity, there may be a way to make a determination who is the owner through Adam that will come and tell us who is the true owner of this property. In a case where ultimately the truth can be determined, that we don't say, through Bezdin, we don't say, kol dom gvar. Ask the Gemara, so my shna, why is this any different from a Gemara that we learned in Masech Bava Metzia, daf kuf amud aleph? The Gemara there speaks about a case where one of the ways we could, with two people, entered an arrangement. The arrangement was Hamachlev Para B'chamor. I have a cow and you have a donkey. And there are a number of ways of making a kinyan on these animals. If we're going to do a kinyan kesef, where the kinyan is done through exchange of money, so as we learned very extensively in Masechta Baba Metzia, a kinyan kesef, just transferring paying in halach, is not enough. You have to actually do meshicha. You have to hagbah, meshicha. You have to take the object that you're buying into your property. But if you do a chalipin, which means a barter, you'll get my cow, and I'll take your donkey. And the halacha tells us that as soon as one of us takes ownership of one of these two animals, that makes the transaction a full-fledged, valid transaction. And therefore, even the party who did not yet get what he was buying becomes the owner of that animal. And now the question is, Yolda, the cow had a baby. But we don't know, when did the cow have the baby? Did the cow have the baby while it was still in its original owner's possession? Or did the cow have the baby already when it was under the ownership of the buyer? Similarly, the Kain Amarka Shavchasai, somebody sells a slave who was pregnant, and it turns out she yolda and had a baby. And again, the question is, when was this baby born? Was it born when it was under the ownership of the original owner or by the second? And we have here a big dispute. The original only says that the baby of the slave was born before the transaction took place. The other one says Mishalakach the Yolda, the only afterwards. So the Gemara over there says Yachloiku. So the question is, ultimately, we're going to know it is possible what happened. There may Adam may show up and tell us what happened. Yes, at this point, there are no Edom that have shown up. And moreover, there are no Edom that will ultimately, there are Edom that have not shown up, and we're not aware of the Edom, but that doesn't mean we should not count on the chance that there will be Edom. And yet, the Mishnah says that the Aloch is Yachloiku, and we're saying in our Gemara that under such circumstances, we say, in our Gemara, Rav Nachman says, under such circumstances, we say, Kol Da'olam Gvar. The Gemara in Masechet Bava Metzia, when it said this Gemara, says there's a machloikus very often in Shas. Throughout Shas, there's a machloikus if we say, when we don't know what to do, on the Yachloiku, we should just divide. That's the opinion of Sumchus. The opinion of the Chachamim always is, Hamaitzi Mechaver Olav Araya. The party who needs to pay has to bring a raya. If you want to extract something for somebody else, haraya, you have to bring a raya that I should have to pay you. So the Gemara over there explained that this halacha that we just spoke about, this Mishnah, Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, that says with the cow, with the slave, is following the opinion of Sumchus, who holds that Mamna Mutabasok Cholkim. According to the Chachamim, will say, Hamoitzim Chaver Olav Araya. So now the question that Tosfos asks is that we always passing like the Chachamim, that Hamoitzim Chaver Olav Araya. So why is our Gemara asking a question from a Mishnah which follows the opinion of Sumchus when we don't follow the opinion of Sumchus that says Yachloiku? So explains Tosfos. When the Chum say that Hamoitz Mechaver Olav Araya, in a case where somebody has a chazaka. So if somebody has a chazaka, we maintain the chazaka, we maintain the status quo. When we don't know what to do, we maintain the status quo. But in a situation such as ours, where neither has a chazaka, even the Chachamim would agree that the halacha is that Yachloiku, and therefore we could explain that that's the case of that Mishnah, and since that's the case of that Mishnah, it's following even the opinion of Chachamim, the Gemara's question is fine. Answers the Gemara. Hasam, lahai islay dror de b'mayna, lahai islay dror b'mayna. And here too, there's a machloikus how to understand what the definition of dror de b'mayna. Rashi explains that the definition of dror de b'mayna means that they both have a legitimate claim. I owned the cow at one point, but I bought the cow. But the other one person bought the cow, and so too vice versa. I owned the slave at one point, but now the other person owns the slave. So they both have a legitimate claim towards this baby that was born. So we both come with a legitimate claim. That's the way Rashi approaches Dror de Mamayna. Tosfos approaches Dror de Mamayna somewhat differently. Tosfos posed Dror de Mamayna is that the question is a question irrespective if we have two litigants coming to have this entire or not. There's a legitimate question, when was this baby born? That question is a legitimate independent question, not necessarily related to the dispute between these two individuals. And therefore, since it's a legitimate independent question, that's when the halacha is yachloiku. Because Beis Din has an obligation to get involved. But hocha, when we have two people arguing over a piece of property, so either maloi demar, either maloi demar. So again, both following Rashi's explanation and Tosfos's explanation. According to Rashi's explanation, there's somebody that's saying something that's not true. There is an owner to this property. We just don't know who is the owner of the property. We don't both walk in with a claim that gives us standing. And therefore, it's not a case of Dror de Mamayna. According to Tosfos, it's the way to understand the Gemara, is that the question is only a question that came up because the two of us decided to have a din Torah, the right thing to do, because we don't know who's the owner of the property. If the two of us had not shown up in Beis Din with this dispute, there's no reason for Beis Din to look at a piece of property and start thinking that there's an argument over this piece of property. And therefore, in this situation, everybody will agree. That's why in this situation, the Gemara says we follow Kol Da'om Gevar. Amin Adoy, says the Gemara, they taught us in the yeshiva in the Hadoy. In Bo Echem and Ashok, if somebody, we have two people who are arguing over a piece of property. And what happened was that a third party, and the halacha as we started this year is, that in such circumstances, the halacha tells us, Kol Da'om Gevar. And while these two people are arguing, a third party came, Vechzikba, and took possession of the property. The halacha is, Eimet Sinais Meyodei. We don't know who is the true owner of a part of the property. Since we don't know who is the true owner of the property, Beis Din, of course, if somebody enters a property that's not his and takes it, so of course it's Beis Din's obligation to remove that person from the property. But here, we don't know who is the owner of the property. As Rashbam explains, it's similar to a situation of somebody who sits down on a property that we don't know who owns that property. Then in such a situation, Beis Din would not evict the person from that property because maybe the property is hefker and maybe it's has no owner. And moreover, Rabbeinu Yonah says that if the two people arguing over a property and there's a possibility that there's a third, that neither of them is the owner of the property, because we don't really know who is the owner of the property. So explains Rabbeinu Yonah, the true owner of the property might be more satisfied that this third party that our Gemara introduced should be on the property. Because this third person is admitting that he doesn't own the property. So when the true owner shows up, it'll be easier for him to evict him from that property. And therefore, since it's easier for the true owner to evict maybe this third party, and we don't know who is the true owner, we should leave him there. The Ritva says that even though the Gemara says that we don't evict this third party, Beis Din cannot get involved to evict this party, that they, doesn't mean that I, who certainly am not an owner of this property, have a right to sit down on this property. What the Gemara, he says, means to say, what the Gemara means to say is that Beis Din won't get involved. But of course, I have no right to sit down on a property that's not mine. The Rishonim, Tosfos asks a question. Why can the two people who are indeed disagreeing who is the owner of the property, in order to get this person evicted, write a hashoah that one should give the other a power of attorney? By giving him the power of the attorney, what are we accomplishing? So if the property is mine, so certainly I have a right to to remove him. And even if the property is not mine, it's the other person's, and he gave me a power of attorney over this property. Would that be acceptable? And Tosfos says it's not acceptable. Because since the two of us are in the middle of an argument, and we are both arguing who is the true owner of the party, the halacha cannot accept that the two of us should be able to join just to evict a third party when we both are not really agreeing on anything other than just trying to get, we're not agreeing on anything just on trying to get this person out of the property. Says the Gemara, the Tani, says the Gemara, the Tani Rav Chiya says, Gazlan Shel Rabim, if somebody steals from the Rabim, the loch is Lei Lav Shmei Gazlan. And the way the Gemara Masechta Bava taught us this Gemara, if somebody stole something from one of five people, but we don't know who is the person who it was stolen, so there we know for certain that it was owned by a certain person at a certain time. We just don't know who is the current owner of that property. Since we don't know who is the current owner of, since we don't know who is the current owner of that property, so the halacha tells us we have a problem because he certainly stole from somebody. But in a case where somebody stole, when somebody stole from Shel Rabim, then we don't have an owner. And here too, since we were not able to identify who is the owner of the property, it's not considered considered a Gazlan Shel Rabim. The Rashbam explains the two cases of a Gazlan Shel Rabim. The first case, that since is our Gemara, since we have two people arguing over this property, and we don't know who is the real owner of that property, that's why it's considered a Gazlan Shel Rabim. Another example, which many Rishonim discuss, is considered a Gazlan Shel Rabim, where somebody cheated the Rabim. For example, somebody has a store and the weights in his store are dishonest. So he cannot identify from whom he stole. And that's called the Gazlan Shel Rabim, because since we cannot identify from whom he stole, the halacha considers him a Gazlan Shel Rabim. The halacha is that a Gazlan Shel Rabim will never be able to determine from whom he stole. The halacha says that he should do tzorchei rabim. And I once saw a tshuva from a Moshe Zatzal that what is the best example of a tzorchei rabim? The Moshe says the best example of a tzorchei rabim is building a mikveh, is building a mikveh for the community. Says the Gemara, the Tana Rav Chiya, Gazlan Shel Rabim lav shmei Gazlan. Rav Ashi disagrees. And he says, Rav Ashi amar lo'olam, when somebody stole a property from two people who were arguing over it, even though neither is able to definitively prove that he is the owner of the property, he's still considered a Gazlan. And the halacha is that we should remove it from him. Because something that doesn't belong to me, I may not keep. And therefore, the halacha is, we should remove it from that person and then put it in front of these two people who have been arguing over it. And as we started the shiur, and then kol dolam gvar will kick in. So ask the Gemara, umay, what did Rav Chiya mean, loy shmei gazlan? Means to say, le'notan le'shoven. We never will know who, the halacha is when you steal from somebody, you have to return it. Here, we won't know who to return it, because since we don't know who owned it, we don't know how to fulfill the obligation of a heshiv as a gzeila. So as the Torah understands the opinion of the Rashbam, that if you stole something from two people who were arguing over something, so, and you don't know who is the owner, in order to fulfill the obligation of a heshiv as a gzeila, you're going to have to give back the item or the value of the item to both of them, if in order to fulfill the obligation of a heshiv as a gzeila. However, the Ramban says that if you took something from somebody's property, but you forgot from where you took it, there the halacha is that the heshiv as a gzeila, you have to return it, and if you don't know to whom to return it, you have to return it to both. But in a case where you take something like our Gemara, where it was never known who was the true owner of this object or property, since it was never really known who is the true owner of this property, there's no obligation of a heshiv as a gzeila. The Torah quotes the Ri, who limits the psak of the Rashbam. He says, where does the Rashbam say that we have this object that they're arguing over, and we don't know who the owner is, you should give it back to both? That's in a case where they're arguing over karka, real estate. That's over metaltlin. But if they're arguing over real estate, and now a third party took that real estate, since there's a halacha, karka ain't an exelus. You can't really steal real estate. You just walk off the real estate. So what says the Ri, says that even the Rashbam would agree that if the case of our Gemara would be is where two people are arguing over a piece of real estate, and the third person just came and possessed it, all he needs to do is just walk away. Just leave it the way it was, and it'll revert back to where it was, but he doesn't have to make both people satisfied. So we learned in the Mishnah that in order to have a chazakah, chazkos and shlosh and shana miyoyim miyoyim, that in order to have a chazakah, you have to be on the property for 3 years. Says the Gemara, however, Amar Baba, idolalei ihu gufet sana de peri. If Adam could say that the person who now is coming to challenge my ownership of this project, of this property, help me clear the property, so that is the biggest proof that he is declaring that I am indeed the owner of the property, and therefore in such a situation, la'al ta'av chazaka, I don't need to have a chazaka of 3 years. The chazaka is there immediately. But the Chashukei Chemed discusses an interesting question. What's going to be the halacha if the person helped me pick this up because I was in danger? I could really hurt myself because this was such a heavy item. So can he say that, well, the reason I helped him pick it up is not because I was admitting that it was his. I helped him because I saw that he could really end up getting sick by picking this up. And as he quotes the Rambam in Perek Yud Gimel of Hilchos Ritzei Halacha Yudal says, if somebody is carrying something that's just too heavy for him, mitzvah lifrak litanimai, there's a mitzvah for everybody to participate in helping the person. We can't let this person be in danger. The person who's carrying this heavy load could really end up being in danger. The Torah is very concerned about everybody, bein rishoyim, bein tzadikim. So it seems from the Rambam that I have an obligation to help this person. But since I have an obligation to help this person, then that may be the reason I helped him, not because I'm admitting that he's sick, that belongs to him. So he wants to say, it depends on the circumstances. For he says, if somebody is a ganef, and I see somebody coming to my house and stealing something, do I have the obligation? Well, it's too heavy for him to carry. So do I have the obligation to help him carry it out? Of course not. So how do we look at this situation? In my mind, this person is a ganef. So since in my mind this person is a ganef, I really maybe don't have an obligation to help him carry something out which he's just a ganef on. On the other hand, an argument can be made that I do have an obligation, that since he believes it's his, so I am doing the right thing by helping him. And therefore, in a case of a ganef, certainly I have no obligation to help him carry out his ganeva. Here, since in his mind he has a right, the fact that I'm helping him is not an indication that I agree it's his. Amar said, but if the person who helped is saying this property belongs to me, says Leperis Herativ, I only set him into this property because he's my worker. And that's why I was helping him, but not because he's the owner of the property. Then the halach is the neman, he would be believed. And what's going to be the halach, therefore, asked the Rashbam. So if he was on the property 3 years, as we've been learning throughout our perek, and now we say, what are you doing in the property? He says, I bought it, and I was on the property, and I now don't have the shtar, because I don't hold on to the shtar more than 3 years. And now I say, well, yes, he was there for 3 years, but because he was working on it, not because it's his, that won't be considered a valid claim. Says the Gemara, says, and therefore, in the first 3 years, you can make a claim that he's a worker. Avalach shalosh, you can't make that claim. Amalei Rav Ashi l'Kana says the Gemara, if that's the halacha, that you can only, that after 3 years that the person was on the property, you can't say that he's an oris, you can't say he's a worker. So what should he do? That does that mean that anybody who brings a worker onto the property will never have an opportunity to not make sure that he doesn't have a chazaka? Omli, so Rav Kahana gives the obvious answer. What he's supposed to do is, before 3 years come, what he's supposed to do is he should make a mechob and say that, why are you on my property? Of course, this whole halacha, as we learned earlier in our perek, points out the ritva, is only when the original owner is on the property. But if he's not on the property anymore, if he's not in town, then we don't expect him to be able to make a mechal. Delight temahachi, hani mishkanta desura. As we discussed previously, mishkanta desura is if somebody lends somebody else money, and the loiva, the borrower, gives a mashkin to the malva, to the lender. So the halacha is that he can't eat the peiris if he's going to get paid back, because that would be a representation of ribis. But what they used to have is they made a mashkanta desura, is that the loiva gave the malva a mashkin, and he said, I owe you $1,000. You could have the payers of this mashkin for 10 years. Every year is the equivalent to $100. Sometimes it'll make $100, and sometimes it won't. The kasabul, mishlashnin elotek arav double kesef. And the way it works is when the term is up, when the 10 years are up, you return the property. So now what's going to be, if the malva is going to hide the shtar mishkanta, and he has it, as the example we gave, for 10 years, and then the owner comes, the loiva comes and says that it's mine. And the person, the malva, is going to say, l'kuchi biyodi. And the reason I don't have the shtar is because it's past 3 years. So suggest the Gemara, will we allow him to get away with it? And the Gemara's question is, Mesakni rabbonim midid osu b'lei de p'seda, with Chazal, by instituting a mashkanta de sura, have created something that somebody can lose money? The answer is l'boilem chuyei. The answer is that that's not an issue, because if I'm the loiva and I gave you my property as a mashkanta de sura, it is my obligation to make sure to issue a protest that this is not completely yours. Hachinami, if you are truly an oris on this property and I want to prevent you from getting a chazok on this property, the way I can accomplish it, the way I have to accomplish it, is by l'mchuyeh, by making mechah, before 3 years go by, that you should be able to establish a chazokah.